Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Hello, good morning, everyone. This is Jaspreet Boparai here with Don Nicholson. And it's time. It's nearly that time of the year, Don, winding up towards the end of 2024.
Hard to believe, Jaspreet. It's hard to believe. We seem to have been nose to the grindstone working at this program for, it seems a lot longer than, it is a lot longer than 12 months, but gee, it just seems to be that we haven't really covered everything we need to. And isn't it interesting? We sort of had a couple of weeks with a bit of a hiatus on full programs and we're just missing it. We've been missing this need to wind up stuff that we needed to wind up. For instance, the COPs, the COPs that were going on around the world, conferences of the parties. And we just missed that opportunity. So let's have a wee wrap up this year, this program, shall we?
Yes, well, we've had a hiatus. The whole machinery of net zero doesn't stop.
No, and in 2025, our listeners here better be very aware as to what our country is seemingly signing itself into. But are they, is my question. I see a whole lot of outs and maybes and ifs and mights, and I know you're very concerned about this is absolute commitments. I think we've got to make sure that we tone down the narratives and make sure that there is only the ifs, maybes and mights that ever happen, because I find it abhorrent that we should be giving pledges to poorer countries or making pledges that effectively give poorer countries a leg up. But we have no idea what that leg up looks like in those poorer countries. It's probably going to corruption and corrupt people. So if it goes anywhere, I just don't know. This is all a bit of a ruse in my belief, my understanding, Jaspreet. Maybe I'm wrong.
The black holes where all this money goes. I feel exactly the same as you, Tom. So let's recap what happened over the last few months, so the last couple of months. The first thing was the Global Nature Positive Summit. The first one ever was held on the 8th of October in Sydney, Australia. And the blurb said that it's a breakthrough in establishing a nature positive economy and accelerating collective action to drive investment in nature. Investment being the key bit here. And it's funny how we are really active down here, down in Oceania, be it Australia, be it New Zealand. We all seem to think we need to be gunning for the first position.
Yeah, and it's odd. We're in the most sparsely populated areas of the world, you'd almost say. And here we are putting ourselves under the pump. It's right that you look after the environment and look after nature and look after stuff around you. None of us wantonly destroy anything. But there's not many days go by where I don't listen to a program, say on Radio New Zealand, or why do I listen to that, you might say, but I do. I listen to other shows just to get a bit of an overview that New Zealand's losing its biodiversity at one hell of a rate, like dozens of species a day potentially going out the door. Well, they're going to have to sell me something better than that story, because that just doesn't make sense to me. Going to the Nature Positive Sydney conference, you do wonder what it was all about. It was a lot of grandstanding by the Minister for the Environment over there, Tania Plibersek, but they are trying to sort of do the next stage of the Convention for Biologic Diversity that was covered off in 2019. And then in 2022, there was the ambition of the Montreal Global Biodiversity Frameworks. And the government's committing to 4 goals and 23 targets. Where have we heard of that before? We've heard of SDGs, haven't we? But anyway, there they are. And I just see it again as another big green grift like climate change. That's what I'm seeing. I mean, as I said, we want to look after what we need to look after and make sure we've got protected spaces. And we have. We've got plenty of them. In New Zealand, 30% of the country is a protected space. And thankfully it is. But more. And then we want to monetize what's left in that as well. I mean, that's the key, isn't it? The monetization of that.
The monetization of it. And that's the other thing. It is not most of these so-called junkets are being driven by NGOs, not by, you know, government officials. And that's where I wonder and I worry that we are losing control, because there's a completely different agenda that is being pushed here. And no one seems to be the wiser. We don't get much out of, say, the beehive upon about what's happening, what's not. And the agenda rolls on. The Nature Positive Summit was then followed by the COP16. And this is separate from the IPCC COP, which we'll come to in a moment. This is COP16, which was the United Nations Biodiversity Conference of the Parties. It was held in Cali, in Colombia, from the 21st October to the 1st of November. Nice, long, almost 10 days. And again, what was the output of that? Pledges, more pledges, pledges of your and my money. The COP16 said that we are going to increase the financial resources for biodiversity by at least $200 billion a year, every year, by 2030. And the target 15 was that large companies, including financial institutions, would be assessing and disclosing nature-related risks, impacts, dependencies, so that by 2050, all financial outflows will be aligned with the vision, the utopia of living in harmony with nature. They also put forth an online reporting tool on which our government, amongst the others, would be presenting their annual reports next year on. So that's another money grab, $200 billion a year. I don't know what our share of that would be quite a few hundred million, seeing what we are already giving to the IPCC. But the grift doesn't stop.
No, and you know, there's a lot of discussion this last few weeks about how we should be setting our net zero targets around the world. So we're changing to I don't want to get off your subject for a moment, but we need to have cost benefit analysis done. Now, isn't it intriguing? We just don't get it with any of this. We just don't get it. And they've got away with it for 30 odd years, these sort of outfits. It's intriguing that, to me, that people fall into line so easily with this. But as I'm saying to you again, I hope New Zealand can start doing some proper interrogation of where this money might go, if it goes anywhere, because I'm not sure it actually is going to get paid. It's a pledge. Is it one that's binding?
Oh, Don, come on. We know. Everything voluntary became binding. You know, where did we hear those famous last words? Nobody was forced. Everyone made their own decisions. It was all voluntary.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me started on this. I'm trying to make this short and snappy. But the COP16 in Colombia was immediately followed by the COP29. So the Conference of Parties number 29 under the umbrella of the United Nations IPCC. So this was the climate change COP that happened in Baku in Azerbaijan, floating on a sea of hydrocarbons, from about the 11th of November. And coincidentally, our Minister for Climate Change, Simon Watts, took on the role of the co-chair in COP29 of the Global Carbon Market Regulations, which to me begs the question, Don, then why would a country like ours, New Zealand, with not 0.06% of the world's population, be at the forefront of this? Why are we gunning for this sort of a position? I mean, of course, like ex-Prime Minister Ardern, Simon Watts could be gunning for a global leadership award on the likes, like the likes of the one that's been bestowed on Jacinda recently, the champion for global change.
Oh, you're so cynical. look, why would he want to do that? Why would he want to do that? I mean, New Zealand's big on free market or free trade and multilateralism. And we've put ourselves in a real corner around this stuff, because we've added a lot of this sort of influences, you know, our climate credentials into free trade agreements. And now we're trying to posture as some sort of global leader on CO2 trading, let alone nature credit trading and more. So, you know, they say they want to make these units more equal around the world. Good luck with that.
A one world carbon currency, if I may use that word.
Yes. Yeah. So good luck with that. And if that's where New Zealand is leading, again, I will say in 2025, listeners, you need to sit on your politicians and really nail them on the stuff. What is it you're trying to do here? Because we don't feel comfortable.
So the main takeaway from the COP29 was that we have sort of settled, we as in this lot, this unelected globalist lot of the IPCC and the woke academia that's been going along, have agreed on implementing Article 6.4 of the Paris Agreement to establish a framework for the creation and trading of carbon credits between countries so that everywhere we have equivalent units and equivalent value. So they say it's going to save us a lot of money, but let's see what it's going to cost us. So the West seems to have agreed in principle at COP29 at Baku to triple the climate finance from the currently $100 billion a year to $300 billion a year, which is very disappointing, say the developing countries like India and China, because their demand was $1.3 trillion. Now, RNZ reported right around that time in November that currently New Zealand is currently providing $325 million a year from 2022 to 2026, based on the $100 billion figure that was before this COP. This supposedly is being given, can I call it climate reparations, Dawn, to other countries to mitigate climate change. And if that $100 billion goes to $300 billion, well, our $325 million will triple to close to $1 billion. How many hospitals is that, I wonder? How many specialist doctors is that?
Yep. All of that, Jaspreet. I'm calling these COPs a ritual of climate, or just a ritual of deceit. There's so many, if you've read or listened to Radio New Zealand, you've watched and read some other articles on it. I've got one from America through Thomas Shepstone, actually, one of our interviewees. And it's headed up by a guy, David Wojcik, via CFACT. And he says, in COP29's finance agreement, diplomacy is truly the art of agreeing to nothing. There is no agreement of substance here because there is no substance to this agreement. Each side gets its number someday, and that's all there is to it. So without going deeply into his article, because maybe I've cherry-picked that, you might argue. Again, I just say 2025, sit on our politicians' backsides or heads, whatever you want to do, to make them front with what this is all about and what it means. And we want a cost-benefit analysis on everything we ever put up to the stuff. I am sick of foreign aid that has no sort of, because that's what this is when it looks like, but it's foreign aid that could be going to corporate grifters or despotic leadership. Who knows? We need to know, as citizens who are out there doing the grift every day, doing the work every day, I've got that word in my head, doing the work every day, producing stuff for the country to create export earnings, to have this sort of stuff coming at us. I'm sick of it. And I don't know why more New Zealanders aren't. I really don't. So wound up about it as I get.
Same. The exact same. I have the same feelings, Don. I mean, if there's one thing I'm grateful for is the fact that over the last few years, United Nations has certainly is a term that most people now take an interest in. At one time, anything the UN, you know, they'd be like, oh, yeah, nothing to see here. Mm. But suddenly I sort of troll social media, and even though I may not comment on everything, I see the comments going and they are encouraging. Now, after
I still sort of think we're slowly expanding that number, Jaspreet, and thanks to people like you and others and RCR getting that sort of story out a little bit more. But there's still a lot of people in our society who actually don't ask the questions like we're now asking. Well, now, I just want efficiency.
It's all the rubbers hitting the road. And if somebody is in Christchurch, late next year in October, I believe, Christchurch is going to be hosting the WASP. What is a WASP, you might ask? It's the United Nations World Adaptation Science Program, along with other usual suspects like the World Meteorological Organization, the United Nations IPCC, and others. And Christchurch will be spearheading the whole initiative, again, yet again, a world first, a conference that brings together, it says, the government, industry, policymakers to innovate cities, biodiversity, youth, capacity building, all those buzzwords under the umbrella of the United Nations in Christchurch.
What a hotbed of fun. Yeah, you'll be attending, Jaspreet. Have you got an early bird ticket?
Bells on, Don. I will be there in some form or the other to see. We've had so much about coastal adaptation and other things this year. We've seen communities like the Kapiti Coast, you know, demanding the science for decades and still not getting it.
Mm.
I suspect I'll see myself along with a few other usual suspects on my side there.
So in the end, everything we've talked about today is about wanting to get some honesty and integrity into everything that we've been sort of pulled into in some sort of almost hypnotic way for 30 years. We're now saying, oh, we're sort of coming out of the trance, and we need to see where all the money flows are and why this is so important. And we might just find that it all falls away. Do you think, just as a positive wee question here, do you think the Trump effect will sort of make any difference to all this? Or is it that these people are all scurrying for positions right now before January 20? What do you reckon?
I saw that Biden is hoping to actually grant some more retrospective pardons to officials who went after Trump during his regime. And that's really telling for me. If you thought you'd done the right thing, why would you need that? You know, you should be able to stand your ground and say, hey, I did this all in good faith. But I think there's going to be a whole lot scudding for cover next year, Don.
All right. Well, look.
The ripples spread here.
Well, look, let's hope there's a bit of infection itself and we get the same sort of influences this way, because he certainly, in my opinion, has put the cat amongst the pigeons, and the pigeons are very worried, and I hope they are, and I hope the pigeons fall off their perch pretty soon.
You know, we are constantly told all of this is just voluntary, but you look at what you and I have constantly been harping on in the rural sector, the methane pledges, that none of that is voluntary. The banks are coming down hard. The bigger in the supply chains, you have the likes of Nestle and Danone and Arla and Tesco's coming down hard. Where is the voluntary involuntary? Everyone is now being herded into the same compliance regime. And Don, I will put you on the spot here. Federated Farmers, do you think they have called this out as clearly, this nonsense, as they should have? Or do you, as I think, they've been fighting or arguing within the allowed narrative?
I think they've been really slow to the party, but I think they've lifted their game this year, as have Beef and Lamb, New Zealand, the levy body. I think they've slowly come around. Maybe I'm giving them too much of an accolade, but they seem to have moved the narrative. I am concerned that the stuff you and I have been talking about for the last 2 years has been in the back room almost. They've perhaps known about it, but it seems to have come forward a bit. And the one that gets me right now is the banking, debanking of potential clients, if they're not in the right industry, for instance. So this global banking alliance just has far too much sway. If they can start influencing which sectors will be banked, more than an individual bank being taking a risk on its own account, they now sort of be, again, as I talk about last week, hunting as a pack. Let's hunt as a pack and let's just destroy an industry. For instance, the one in New Zealand that's being talked about by Fed Farmers at the moment is perhaps this defunding of, by one bank, of fuel stations, country fuel stations, or fuel stations in general.
Yeah, I'm glad Federated Farmers have picked up the cudgels. And listeners, in case you don't know what we're talking about, certain smaller, and I think Waitomo Fuel is among them, smaller petrol stations, independent ones in the rural areas, have been told by BNZ that they have a policy of, again, no more new lending, but along with that, they also want to completely amortize the debt by 2030. That means no further debt. Even if you've had an existing loan, beyond 2030, you need to repay it and make good. The CEO of BNZ, Dan Huggins, was in front of Stuart Smith, MP, and the Finance and Expenditure Committee recently, and he said that this was correct. He confirmed this, that rural petrol stations would be debanked. But he said this is not because of climate policy, but it's because of the credit risk of future petrol stations. And then he went on to say that according to whatever crystal balls they look into, there would be 2 million EVs on New Zealand roads by 2030. Keeping in mind, we currently have less than 80,000. So from 79,000 something, if you have to go to 2 million by 2030, that's an increase of 2,425%. Fabulous. I would love to see the assumptions underlying those projections by BNZ, and Federated Farmers have spoken out against the Net Zero Banking Alliance, which is what BNZ quoted in the paperwork. And the Net Zero Banking Alliance, again, goes back to COP26 in Glasgow under the umbrella of the United Nations. So,
And on top of that,
voluntary, of course.
Yeah, and on top of that, we've got you and me as taxpayers supposedly underwriting charging stations around the country for the 80,000 currently electric vehicles.
So 2 million.
Them will be charged at home.
Yeah. 2 million are coming by 2030.
Yeah, yeah. So, they've had to discount the prices this year by a massive amount for EVs, and they will have to do it to get to 2 million. They'll have to give them away, Jaspreet. Because that's 2 million is not going to happen. But Chloe's got the answers. This is all about sort of the current government voting against or fighting against free market capitalism. She is thick as a brick. That's the problem. There's nothing free market about this. So brick is part of her name. That's thick as a brick. She wouldn't know a free market if she fell over it. She's exactly the anti-market. She's the antithesis of free markets. And I'm, 2025, these people have got to be called out for the damage they do to you and me as productive people. It's just not right. It's an abuse.
You and I, we've spoken about the impact of this unelected globalist dictates from half a world away on domestic New Zealand policy. In fact, I was called a conspiracy theorist by a certain MP in Bacargill when my simple question in 2021 winter to him was, what do you think about the increasing impact of United Nations on domestic New Zealand policy?
Yes, I was there and I remember that embarrassing moment. I don't think it was one of Mr. Seymour's most glowing performances. He had a fabulous night and he didn't like that question. I'd like to know what his answer would be today. I think it could be modified.
Somewhat. Yeah, but this is the most unsatisfactory. I told you so. We've seen this coming, but this is now really coming to a head. And I'm really enjoying the lighthearted tone that the Methane Science Accord has used over the last week on really outing the nonsense that's being pushed by the co-ops, the banks, as well as the outfits like AgriZero, which are being funded to the tune of hundreds of million to find a holy methane that's being belched out by our cows.
And absolutely. And still, the minister's still talking about 2030 emissions pricing on agriculture as one of his pillars. I mean, why did that come out a few weeks after the ag emissions were supposedly taken out of the emissions trading scheme? We're still going to have a pricing scheme of some kind in 2030. So let's hope this is all about a slow letdown of the balloon, the hot air balloon called net zero. Let's hope it is slowly leaking its air and the great agricultural swindle can be terminated because the balloon goes flat. I'm hoping that. I mean, but farmers need to actually wake up to what's happening all around them. And the farmers that are saying, but yes, we can, you know, they tick all the boxes and yes, they can. And, you know, the real stooges that the alarmist side get in their pocket, they need to be called out for what they are. They are damaging to most other farmers. In fact,
if you're a farmer listening to this, I would highly recommend you please go back and listen to our interview with the US professor, Dr. Tom Sheehan, who came to New Zealand last winter. So this was June, July of 2023. And he gave a talk at various places in the country, methane, the irrelevant gas. We had him on here. It's a short half an hour interview. And he blows to bits the economic suicide that he thinks the world's leading farmers are being put to by the politicians.
Well, and it's quite clear now that around the world, methane is being hammed up as something bigger than Texas to go after, because CO2 is finally, they're realizing that's too hard. And let's go after the bogey called, the really potent bogeyman called methane. Well, you know, Thomas Sheehan just debunks all of that. But then you've got, you know, perhaps our friends in the other alternative media who are trying to say it's that we're the nutcases here. Well, sorry, we get real people doing real science without any real, you know, they're not in the pay of a government or a corporation saying real stuff. And so, yeah, when you get the likes of Dr. David Dilley talking about global cooling will be here by 2030, 2031, listen to that. That was perhaps midwinter this year, just 2024. I mean, I listened to the first 30 minutes of it again the other day, and I thought, because when you're interviewing Jasper, I don't know, you just sometimes miss the best bits, and gee, he had some good stuff. Professor Ian Plimer,
It's been what, Don, you looked at it, close to 290 hours of recording out there, and we've had well over 100 guests. And I am extremely grateful and privileged over these last nearly 2 years of doing this to have spoken to people who, in another world, I would never have spoken to. You probably would have, Don. You walked in different haloed I am beyond thrilled to have spoken to some of these guys and actually been able to, you know, email them and ask them for clarifications and get some things clearer in my own head.
Well, I'm almost cringing at some of the stuff that I've questioned in recent times. In fact, I find it far easier to be interviewed than interviewing someone, even if I stuffed up and got humiliated by the interviewer. I found it really hard to do this because it's not my bag, really. But I learn a lot, and it's great to know that we have supporters, and great to know that we're not alone, and great to know that more and more people are getting on track with the stuff that I've been around for 30 or 40 years. And people say, oh, but you're all negative. You're a negative person. You know I'm not. You know that I love a great time. You know that I do some stupid stuff and waste money and live a decent life. But I just know it to be so much better. And you know what the base of all this, it comes back to that learning in 1985, that legislated privilege feeds you for a while, but when the chips are down and it has to all be taken away, it ends in tears. And I have never taken a dime of legislated privilege since 1983, I suppose, when I went farming. It taught me a lesson, and I can't accept, even as I've finished my careers in farming perhaps and other things, that farmers have been seduced again more recently to take, like businesses, little inducements, like a bit of free fencing or a bit of plantings or something like that. It's a slippery slope. So I like to think that I'm the pure one here, the pure one.
I agree, Don. There's no free lunches. That thing holds true through time immemorial, and I would like to think that I have not done that either.
Well, and so
you never needed, paid my own way, and made the best out of whatever I got.
Yeah, and that's what I've observed with you. And over the last 18 months, 2 years, we've talked about that a lot, and it's a common thread we have, and I'm grateful to have it. I just wished you came to New Zealand 15, 18 years ago, and you've observed what's going on, and it doesn't sit well with you, just like it hasn't sat well with me for over 30 years. And yeah, I think we're wise heads. So look, I hope that our listeners enjoyed our output in 2024, and hopefully we can do it again in 2025. What say you?
We've had a lot of fun doing this, John. It's been great having you along for the ride for these last nearly 2 years. We've had some fun here. You know, no matter what the topics that Don and I speak about are not that fun and not that sexy, I should say. But it is stuff that's vital that people get out there. But we've had a lot of fun doing this. So make no mistake, I'm certainly no, you know, gloom and doom person myself. The occasional, you go, oh God, not again. But now we roll with the punches here. So as we close, I think it is time for Don and me to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, a very Happy New Year. I hope you have a safe and fun summer, whatever you do. And we'll see you on the other side. John.
Yep, I agree. 100%. Next year, here we go.
Next year, here we go. 2025. Watch out then. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you next year.
If you've been told to pull up your socks recently, then make sure it's a pair of RCR socks. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.